This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast, MWWire.com, where you can find all of our watch list things, our previews, our expansion talk about, because that's still kind of going on, realignment here and there. But we are doing our final team preview. We made it, the Vada Wolf Pack. 11 other podcasts. Number 12 is here. The season is here shortly.
That's right.
So how are we feeling about the Wolf Pack, especially after last year?
I filled in my win-loss record projection. We'll get to it later. And, well, I'm not feeling great, Matt, to be honest. Ken Wilson has a lot of work to cut out for himself to do a good job. He took over a very difficult position when Gene Orvell left a year and a half ago. And so it's there's still work to be done to get this team to be competitive within a conference.
And he was definitely starting from a deficit, especially after all of the high-profile defections last year. And even despite all of that, you know, it's easy to forget, perhaps, that the Wolfpack actually started last year with two straight wins, you know, on the road at New Mexico State. Ended up being a bowl team. We've talked about the Aggies a couple of other times in these podcasts. And then at home against Texas State, you know, beating a not that great Bobcats team the way that they probably should have, at least on paper. And then after that, the wheels just kind of came off in a number of different ways. If it was a one thing, like, you know, giving up 55 points to Incarnate Word and a 2-touchdown loss, it was other things like, you know, an offense that got shut out against Iowa on the road, which, you know, may not be terribly surprising, but also they didn't have just a lot of good luck, period, throughout last year. They were also 0-3 in conference play and one score games. They lost the Fremont Cannon to UNLV. Mm-hmm. You know, by the time it was all said and done, it was a team that, you know, it did a couple of things well, but on the aggregate was kind of a letdown, even despite the fact that they were, you know, turning over so much personnel. You thought that they might get some late season momentum, for example, in the same way that Hawaii did, or have at least some maybe early season momentum like UNLV did to sort of get off to a better start. But they finished the year 125th by SP Plus. They finished 114th in net points per drive, and they finished 116th in available yards percentage per drive. And now they've got to try and make progress while also missing, you know, maybe arguably their top two or three defenders from last year. arguably their top two offensive linemen from the past two seasons, as well as some other playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. And so I know that there are some prognosticators out there who think that they will at least be able to hold the line from last year's 2-10 record. But on paper, it's not the great. I mean, it's not terrible because they do have a number of players coming back on both sides of the ball. You know, I believe they're returning at least half the starting lineup on both offense and defense, but there are a lot of questions, no doubt, where it could go in a number of different directions, including a step backwards.
Yeah, because you look at quarterback, who they start, Cox and Illingworth, all year long. Like, who are they? They rotated and played, whether ineffectiveness or just not health wise. I'm looking at the high passing every game. They basically split the high passing yardage per game. So quarterback's the question. Running back's the question because Tua Tao has been there for 4+ years. He's gone. So I would like to be optimistic, but I'm also like realist. I'm like, I don't know what's there to like. They gave up 34 sacks on the offensive line for the quarterback from the not great offensive line play. They running game was just over 3 yards a carry. BJ Castile was a pretty good receiver. He's one of the, probably the spotlight of the team with 48 receptions, and he's not there anymore. And so I don't know what to look for. What's a positive thing? We start quarterback. Like, what is the situation there going to be? Because they just kind of rotated last year. Nate Cox had doubled the yards of Shane Illingworth, but it's not like he was very good. They only had 7 total touchdown passes, Matt. That's got to be one of the worst in the country last year.
Worst in the country for a non-option team, but we'll say that.
If you
dig deep enough into Illingsworth's numbers, you can make a case that he was maybe a little bit underserved by the talent that was around him. You mentioned the sack rate, and this, I think, ties definitely into the offensive line as well. Mm-hmm. But between him and Cox, they also absorbed a team sack rate of 8.5% last year, which was 104th in the country. So it's not like the guys in front were often doing them a lot of favors. And at least according to Pro Football Focus, there are some signs to think that, like, if he can get a little more reliable help from in the passing game, that he might be able to take a step forward, provided he can win the job, for instance. So, like, he only started 6 starts, only had a completion rate of 57.9%, only 5.2 yards an attempt. But at the same time, PFF has their adjusted completion rate percentage, which accounts for drops and things like that. And Illingsworth's figure, 71.2%, was actually 5th in the Mountain West among quarterbacks with at least 100 dropbacks. And that was, I think, owing mostly to the fact that he also dealt with a drop rate of 9.6%. Among his receivers. So if that comes down, like if that gets cut in half, let's say, that's a hand, that's like 1 or 2 more completions per game. That's potentially 1 or 2 more extended drives mm-hmm. that the Wolfpack weren't getting last year. So there is that perhaps to look forward to. But then it may also be that the situation goes back to square one where nobody can seize control of the role, especially since they brought in another quarterback from the transfer portal and Brendan Lewis from Colorado.
Yeah, he 15 games starting for Colorado in 2021. So, and remember, Colorado, not very good team. So it's not like they're bringing a guy. The experience is helpful, clearly, but they bring in a guy who was at Colorado was good in 2020. They had a pretty good, their solid year that season. But Brendan Lewis played for one of the worst teams in the country, and he transfers to one of the worst teams in the country. So his more starting experience and playing time, but I wouldn't expect too much. I don't know if I'd even lean to a starter. It's a competition, but like they bring him in. Because Nate Cox is gone. So just Illingworth versus Brendan Lewis here.
And I think it's worth noting that, in his time with the Buffaloes, it wasn't like he was bad. It was a sophomore season, it was a freshman season, I believe. Maybe a redshirt freshman. I apologize. But
COVID year, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but he completed 58% of his throws and he had 10 touchdowns against only 3 interceptions. Mm-hmm. I believe he had a streak of 150 completions without an interception, or 150 attempts rather. 150 completions without an interception would be remarkable. Anyway, that was the 3rd longest streak in that program's history. So like he has flashed a propensity to at least take care of the football, which is not an insignificant thing in an offense that looks like it's going to have questions everywhere. I think he also may deserve at least a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, because as you mentioned, like Illingworth last year, he didn't have a lot to work with them around him in Boulder either. And so I think the hope is that one of those guys is going to claim the job clearly enough that they don't have to go back through this rotation that cost them like half the season last year. But if they can't,
it's so bad.
But if they can't, you know, then there might be other options on the table. Like maybe they give AJ Bianco, the former, you know, top recruit from Hawaii, maybe they give him a look. Or alternatively, maybe they turn to a true freshman like Jax Leatherwood. So I think they're hoping for the best. But at a minimum, maybe they have options that they can at least turn to if it looks like the rebuild is going to take another season and they're going to want to get younger guys longer, you know, more extended auditions, you might say.
Yeah, and then if we get a running back, like I mentioned, Luis Toitao, who started seeming forever and was above average throughout this time frame. But okay, now what are they going to do? They bring in transfer running backs like John Dollars from Oregon. Their top two, they have Ashton Hayes, both transfers coming in. Maybe they can come in and do something for playing, like especially Dollars at a good Oregon program. And then where'd Hayes come from? Was he from Cal? Yeah, Cal. And Cal's not necessarily known for their explosive offense. But it could be more transfer guys stepping in. It sounds a lot of schools like transfer guys who's going to come in and start, they come in right away. And maybe Dollars could do something for them to at least replace guys who've actually played a little bit of college football. It's tough to replace a 4 or 5 year starter. And we look at what he's done at his past school. I'm trying to, oh, great. Thanks for pop up websites here. I love it when pop ups show up when I'm looking for information. But he played a dozen games last year. He was injured in 2021, played every game during the COVID year. He played as a freshman, redshirt, still got to use the redshirt year, playing in 4 games, but his stats weren't anything amazing. He did have 5.5 yards of carry in the time he had last year, which when just under 200 yards, and could catch the ball reasonably well. So there's that. Like I think there is some potential with him there for just being around a really good program in Oregon, but his experience is lacking, which most transfer players who come in are, they transfer for a reason, not getting playing time, didn't live up to the expectation or just whatever reason it may be. And I could see a little bit with Dollars being okay. Like he's shown a little bit here or there because Oregon's good, but it's going to be wait and see in some of these positions. And that's one where it's better that than having some younger guy who's never, ever played. So that's a positive I could lean that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have to imagine that Dollars is probably going to get every chance to beat the guy in the backfield. And I think, you know, the yards per carry that you mentioned last year, if you're a Nevada fan, that's probably what you're hoping to see, especially since, you know, for as prolific as Toitao was in accumulating counting stats, he wasn't always the most efficient running back out there. Case in point, he only averaged 4.2 yards per carry last year, his final season. So I have to think that if Dollars can at least get to 4.5 yards per carry, like that right there is probably going to be a win. But, you know, beyond that, you know, they just don't have a ton of on-field experience, which makes it very hard to project. You know, because I believe Dollars only has like something like 67 career touches.
Yeah.
You know, 18 career receptions and 49 carries. Behind him, Hayes, yeah. You know, you mentioned he comes in from Cal, but he was primarily a kick returner with the Golden Bears. Reno native. So, he's from the area and, you know, he was, I believe, recruited pretty heavily by the program, at least, or courted very heavily out of high school.
Yeah,
and then beyond them, you have other guys, you know, who have seen, you know, very limited playing time, mostly Comer, Cross Patton. So I think, again, you're hoping for the best, which is that Dollars can be at least an adequate replacement for Vertawa and Devontae Lee out the gate. But in the worst case scenario, no, again, like quarterbacks, you know, nobody steps up and it's a mess of a running game that averages 4 yards a game.
I'm trying to be positive here, but there's a lot of hoping maybe if just kind of a we'll see type of positions here, because like you mentioned, it's also losing it's two things, man. They weren't great last year, but they're also losing in some positions a lot of experience that even that wasn't, that was just okay. Like Toa Talon and Devontae Lee were fine. They weren't amazing, but they weren't bad. But they're losing, but losing that type of talent on a team that's projected to not be great is devastating. And I just don't know what to, I think the running game will be, will probably be their bright spot. But what happens if, let's just say it is whoever's a quarterback, Brendan Lewis or Shane Illingworth, and they're just not ideal. Teams can just stack the box and just attack and like, okay, we don't care if you throw, you're not a good quarterback. You can't give me passes. So when you do try to run, we have 7-8 guys up there. Play action is never going to work. And then it'll stifle the running game. So there's nothing. Are they going to have to, I don't know. There's a lot of scenarios where I could see it going really bad. I hope that's not the case. I hope one of these guys pops out and does something, but it's
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm
emphasize that point. This seems like a really good time to note that in terms of opportunity rate, which is just the ability to get your running backs to the second level, the Wolfpack were 126th in the country last year. They were only able to do so 40.9% of the time. So you're absolutely right. Like, it's going to take a lot of things to come together for this running game to really work the way that I think they envision it to. I think if you're looking for upside on this side of the ball, it is probably in the pass catchers, though. But again, a lot of that is going to depend on just getting improved quarterback play. Because they have at least a couple of interesting pieces and then some wild cards beyond that who could feasibly catch somewhere between 20 and 30 passes this year. You know, one guy that I think maybe deserves a little more attention than he's received this offseason is a guy like Dalavon Campbell. Who, you know, on paper, like the numbers don't necessarily jump out, but it obscures the fact that he had a pretty strong end to the season in the last five games, 25 catches, 322 yards and a touchdown. Not a ton of ability to stretch the field, but again, part of that probably has to do with a little quarterback play or just, you know, misfiring, things like that. But if there was no doubt that he was the team's number one option by season's end. So I think you look at his physical profile, I believe he's listed at like 6'4". You know, that's an unusual physical profile for, you know, wide receivers, I think, among the entire conference this year. So he's a very interesting player that I'm looking forward to see what kind of progress he can make, regardless of whoever's under center. And then, you know, to a lesser extent, you know, Jamal Bell has proven he can handle the slot. You know, no touchdowns last year, but he did have 28 catches for 279 yards. The trick for him is he has to improve the 15% drop rate that he had last year.
Yeah, you can't. You definitely can't do that. And then also Spencer Curtis is back. So they do have, their numbers weren't great, man, but they have guys who've played and had somewhat of a success. Yeah, that drop rate's not great. Lower that down well below 10%. That's going to be solid.
We got one of the questions from one of our followers on Twitter about which player position group do you think has the potential to surprise? And I do think this unit would be my answer. And to answer more specifically the other part of that question, it's actually two answers from my opinion that I'm very interested to see what kind of role they end up playing. On the one hand, you know, they bring in a guy like John Jackson III from USC, who is you know, one of those guys, one of a number of guys who's sort of indicative of Nevada's strategy through the transfer portal, which was to sort of pick through the Pac-12, find, you know, former three-star, maybe low four-star guys and see what they might be able to do. So, someone like Jackson might be able to thrive with an outside receiver in an admittedly less stacked wide receiver room. And alternatively, another guy like tight end Kelechi Lachu coming in from Cal, 18 catches, 207 yards and a touchdown last year. Maybe he can be that answer, that added weapon that the Wolfpack didn't really have last year, where I think they expected more from Carlton Brown before he transferred to Cal Poly, didn't quite get it. And then beyond that, you mentioned Curtis is back. Carlos Sandy is also back. And between Dyson Frank and Cooper Schultz, they have at least a pair of reliable blocking tight ends. So I do think this group has something. Mm-hmm. But again, it's going to depend on the offensive line taking a step forward to help the quarterback, and then the quarterback's going to have to help themselves to help receivers.
I think a lot of these guys, like when we mix the Jacks and these transfers coming in, whether a guy, I think with return guys who only have special team experience, like Jackson, similar to running back situation from the other Cal transfer and running back, they have played special teams. There's going to be a spot for him and others to where, hey, it's like their last go around, so they're gonna do the best they can. Like Jackson's listed as a backup Z receiver if you look over at Our Lads, which is does a pretty good job putting together a depth chart, so he's not necessarily coming to be one of the top three guys, but there's players like him and Ashton Hayes at running back where, hey, this Hayes has more time to play, I should say, because he's a younger player. But for Jackson, like I was reading up what he wrote at Nevada Sports, and like his grandfather was part of the USC coach staff that was with Charles White, winning national championships. All his family are elite athletes at USC. His sister is a current Pac-12 all-conference soccer player. Mm-hmm. And then he goes there and doesn't follow up to what they're doing, to kind of what the success his family's had of their coaching or playing at USC. And they play in week one, which is kind of an interesting thing that he noted about. Kind of, oh, it'll be fun to see those guys. But it'll be a chance for him, like, oh, here's my last chance to actually do something. Like, yeah. If he has a good year, he's probably, honestly, he's probably not playing football after this year. He probably knows that. Who knows if how this year turns out, if he shows up and has like 60 catches and like six touchdowns, and like 500 yards or something, or 800 yards, something above average. Like, oh, maybe we'll get a look at a USFL or something like that. But these type of guys, this is kind of what Nevada might need. Like some of these people, it's either their last chance to really be good or their first chance to come out. Like, all right, here's a fresh new start. Like Hayes coming in, not to go back to running back, but he's from Nevada. Like, hey, here's my chance to shine, to have success. And with a couple of guys coming in, receiver, and with the guys coming back, like I mentioned, Jamal Bell and these players, it is an area like similarly answer a question about what could be like, not necessarily surprise unit, but the best unit on offense is probably going to be this group. But again, it goes back to, remember, 34 sacks last year. Ellingworth had minus 111 sacks yards, 20 sacks. And so the line's going to bear a lot out to this team, how well they'll be everywhere.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because you the way that you frame sort of the situation with every other position group that we talked about so far, guys who are coming in from other places, Pac-12 destinations, who are like hungry to take advantage of that chance. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really apply to the offensive line, because on the one hand, it was not particularly good last year. We mentioned the sack rate a little bit earlier. Also ranked in the triple digits nationally by stuff rate, by overall sack rate, which I think I mentioned earlier, line yards per carry, they were 119th. And they very clearly missed Aaron Frost, who, by the way, no longer with the team, he transferred out to Arizona State. And then they also lost their best offensive lineman from last year as well, Grant Stark, transferred to Oregon State. So even despite the fact they're bringing back seven different players who had at least one start last year, it goes back to what you mentioned earlier about, returning production is only going to get you so far, other than maybe Zach Welch, who, six starts last year, 67.8 PFF grade was, I believe, the best among any returners among this unit. There's just a lot that we don't know about how much they're going to be able to improve. Because a lot of guys got playing time last year, and maybe there's one or two open competitions, but there's a lot of unknowns. Like one case in point, Isaiah World is probably going to start at one of the one of the offensive tackle positions. He was at right tackle in 2022. He's projected in most places to the left this year. But he had 11. He gave up 11 sacks, according to Pro Football Focus. Granted,
that was
his freshman campaign. So, like, yeah, he was definitely getting his feet under him, so to speak. But that is sort of the example of what this offensive line is going to collectively face, because they have a number of experience options at this point. You know, Welch is one, World is another. You know, they're losing Bryce Peterson to graduation, but Andrew Madrigal is back. He started games at center and guard last year. So that, you know, they have players back. Like, we haven't even mentioned like Kai Arneson, Frank Poso, you know, Joey Capra. So they have options, but it's one, we don't know how it's going to shake out, you know, who's going to win starting jobs. And two, it's not a given that they're going to progress. And so if this unit stagnates, then the rest of the offense is going to end up navigating a lot of the same problems, or all of the same problems, that they did a year ago.
Yeah, it's going to be learning quickly when they open up against USC. And they play a good Idaho team, who's, I think, a top 10 FCS team week two. So they're going to be thrown out there quickly. And that lack of experience, yeah, they started and played a little bit. It's going to be a rough go early on. And it's what's going to, unfortunately, if you're a Nevada fan, going to make for a long season. Maybe a couple of guys step up and the experience will toughen them up and build them for a year, next year or two. But like you mentioned, what did you say? Seven players, like one start each for a handful of players. That's not a lot. Mm-hmm. That's not good for a player when you what they lost from last year. So it's hard to say it can't be worse than last year, but they may want to buckle up, man, and be ready, because there's a chance it may not be as good as last year.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for improvement, you want an offensive line that can keep defenders from getting into the backfield as consistently as they have been over the last couple of years. You know, even 2 years ago, they had a stuff rate that was 129th in the country, you know, 25% basically. That wasn't really much better in 2022. It was 20.3, trending in the right direction. But I think if you're looking for this offense to take a step forward, it has to keep, you know, that those kinds of numbers in particular have to keep coming down. They have to be able to open consistent running lanes for guys like Dollars and Hayes and whoever else ends up in the backfield. They just have to be better as a group.
Yeah, and maybe the offense, they'll be able to change a couple of things where it's a shotgun, or do what Colorado State did last year with Clay Millen at quarterback, where he was getting chased all around, where it's quick passes, short passes. And we can expect it, because last year Tua Taua at the running back had 41 receptions. And then you had Devontae Lee had 13. So there's a precedent for them to throw the ball to the backfield to running backs, swing passes, short passes. Maybe that's something they'll need to do. And maybe do some counter type plays, whether play action counters or just traditional. Like, I mean, I know he mentioned four plaques may not work if they're not throwing the ball well, but something a little bit creative, a little bit to just give the quarterback an extra half second or second with some sort of delay type play, motion, shotgun, something. They're going to have to be a little more creative in the plays they run to allow more time to throw if the offensive line is not very good. And so there's a couple of things they could do, and probably what they'll have to, maybe have a pulling tackle or a pulling guard on certain plays just to have an extra blocker for some type of play they're going to run, have a tight end or have a receiver go in motion to kind of clip a defensive end and run a quick out route or something, or like a fade, or like a, not fade route, but like a, you know, I mean, just like just kind of going across 2 yards across line of scrimmage for a quick pass. So I don't know the exact term, kind of an out pattern, but a shorter one, if you know what I mean, but something like that to get the ball out of their hands quickly and provide as much time as possible. And that could be a way to assist or build confidence to where they're making plays. So the quarterback's obviously not getting rushed down or chased down. The offensive lineman is not getting beat as much, or just shows them, just showing any type of success will build confidence. Like, oh, I can do this. And then maybe that'll work and that can get them a few more points here or there. But that's kind of what they'll probably have to do, and rely more on scheme than talent until those to kind of balance out and even out to where the talent gets closer to what type of scheme they want to run, that they can open up the playbook more. So I think that's their best hope with this inexperience of a line, new quarterback, new running backs. Like, it's a lot of new players coming in. And I don't have offhand how many players came in to participate in spring football, but regardless, it's a lot of new team, whether graduation and transfers coming in. And the offense is going to have to, again, they're going to have to make the most of what they have. And some of these guys want to run themselves or give one last chance to ball out.
So now here's a fun question for you. Do you think the defense is reloading, or do you think it's rebuilding in 2023?
Man, I don't know. They gave up, let's see, 55, 48, 31, 35, 41, 41 points a game.
You know what's kind of funny? Like, by some measures, the defense was very Mexico-like last year.
Okay.
And I say that because, you know, if you like I said, if you sort of examine the numbers a little bit more closely, I mentioned earlier that the team as a whole was 114th in net points per drive, for example. But a lot of that had to do more with the inefficiencies on offense than with the defensive side of the ball. On that side of the ball, they were actually 69th in the country, allowing 2.26 points per drive. Same thing with available yards percentage, you know, where the offense was 125th, the defense was actually 51st. And they did at least a couple of things well. Like, they had 11 interceptions last year in pass defense. They had a sack rate as a team just outside the top 50, 6.7%.
Mm-hmm.
But as I mentioned earlier, they're replacing just as much on this side of the ball, if not more. And I think there is maybe even bigger questions about how they're going to replace some of the production, especially up front, where they're having to replace Dom Peterson, an all-time program great, with, you know, some known quantities back with fall, but no one that has proven to be anywhere nearly as productive as he had, as Peterson was in his career.
No, he was great. I know he had a little bit injury issues here and there, but he's your favorite player ever from Nevada football. We get it. But he's also really
good.
That's correct. Like, you're right. He took up space. He made plays. He may not. I honestly don't think he got the recognition he should have deserved for how important he was to this team. So that's a gigantic loss. And his
Here's what I'll say, though. I think the interior of the defensive line might be all right.
Well, like, they got Jackson LeJuice from Oregon, who could be interesting.
Well, isn't he more likely to play linebacker?
Oh.
Or they have him set up for an edge?
I've seen both, so maybe I'm misspeaking here, but continue with your thought about the interior, why it could be so good.
Well, I think they'll be adequate, I think, because they have at least three or four guys who could reasonably fit into that rotation. And even if there isn't an all-conference performer in the bunch, they might all be like relatively strong links collectively. So, like, you know, James Hansen and Deion Washington, for example, only combined for 3 sacks and 8 TFLs last year. But, you know, between the two of them, I don't think they were on the field quite as often as Peterson was from down to down. So, yeah. And just I went and I looked that up real quick. Peterson played 490 snaps, and both Hansen and Washington played under 400. So you figure, you know, some of that workload comes to them. Maybe they're a little bit more productive. You know, they also brought in, you know, Makaveli Malotumau from Utah Tech. Limited sample size, but he was pretty productive with the Trailblazers. You know, Dwight Togolia, same thing. Pretty promising in a small sample last year for the Wolfpack. So the interior might be fine. I think the bigger question is, okay, well, who's going to rush the passer from the edge? Who's going to defend the run from the edge? Because, you know, they do have some holdovers from last year. Louis Cresto is back. Thomas Witt is back. You know, Elijah Winston, who's probably going to be that primary rush linebacker, is back as well. But, you know, the major X factors up front is, you know, someone like, for example, Henry Ikaikahipa, former tight end for the Wolfpack, went away for a couple of years, went to JUCO, went to Cal, back with the Wolfpack as a defensive end. What is he going to be able to accomplish? It's a situation that I'm not sure what to make of it. Like, I don't know exactly what they're expecting to get out of their edge rushers, but they need something. Because, at least in terms of like pass rushing, for example, you know, as a team, they had 27 sacks last year. Dom Peterson had 6 of them. Nobody else had more than 3. Same thing in terms of like tackles for loss. You know, 76 as a team. Peterson had 13. No one else on the team had more than 9. And maybe more importantly, up front among the defensive linemen, that number was down to 5. So they just need, as a group, more guys to be a little more productive, a little more disruptive, to be able to make up for the one big hole in the center of that defense.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot. And A couple one interesting thing, like we'll get to the line, but I was just looking at returning talent. Did you see who three of the top four tacklers are from last year who are gone?
Yeah, wasn't it the people in the secondary?
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah,
secondary. All three of their safeties.
Yeah, all three safeties, including Bentley Sanders. We're gonna and goes back to the defensive front line. Like, how good were they last year? I know Peterson was solid and what they hit 34 tackles last year, six sacks. But the defensive front has to step up and do more. You can't have your secondary be, it was three of their top four of their top six, and five of their top eight tacklers were from the secondary. That's not good. You got to have, that means their running backs are getting to second level. They're getting easy passes across the middle. They got to have, you want your linebacker, obviously this is no doubt, you want like Drew Watts back to be your top tackle. You want other linebackers, defensive linemen to be the guys who are leading your team in tackles. You don't want all your safeties and secondary and cornerbacks to make those type of plays. So that kind of goes back to where, okay, the front wasn't that great last year. They need guys to come in and have those. They need to flip that. Like, if you have one safety who's up there, it could be a guy who just quarter blitzes or steps up into the hybrid position teams out there now. But they got to have these new guys step up and be playmakers and be aggressive. You can't, because it takes away from your secondary if you're having to make all these tackles, whether it be designed because you don't trust it, or the front seven just doing a poor job of getting hands and tackling people. And so whoever's up there, they just got to, Ken Wilson, who's a defensive coach, by the way, coming from Washington State from before, he's got it right. Washington State, correct? Right? Not
Ken Wilson came from Oregon, didn't he?
No. Oh shoot. Oh man, I don't want to get this wrong. This is terrible. I want to double check. I'm like, wait, as soon as I said, I'm like, wait, is that right? I'm pretty sure it's Oregon. Otherwise, yeah, it was Oregon. Otherwise, Washington State. I'm thinking of something else. I apologize for that. But him being a defensive guy, he's got to figure it out and not have your secondary lead your team in tackles. And so the front guys coming in, like whether it be transfers or new players, it's got to be figure it out. Like, they have co-defensive coordinators, obviously, if you weren't sure, like Derek Sage and Kwame Eggman are the guys. But again, the main thing I'm reading right here, a lot of stuff, get in the backfield, make plays, get tackles, sacks. Maybe there's I don't know, man. I'm just like seeing that again and researching what the defensive players were doing, who was making the plays. They kind of have the wrong guys making tackles, Matt. That's my long-winded answer there or comment.
Well, and I think your answer to that, though, is not necessarily all on the defensive line. I think if you're looking for anything, you're looking for more production from the linebackers, because at least on paper, it seems to me like that unit is the strength on this side of the ball coming into this fall. You mentioned Drew Watts earlier. Another guy who maybe didn't get enough attention in terms of like up and comers across the Mountain West, 57 tackles last year, 9 TFLs, 3 sacks. You know, he had a quality campaign and he's pretty much set in the middle of that defense, and forget it. As far as, you know, he's like the new Lawson Hall in a sense. Naki Mataialona, also pretty good. 54 tackles, 3.5 TFLs, 2 sacks. So that duo is probably set alongside Winston, who's more of like that rush type. Mm-hmm. I think the bigger question is, they also brought in a pair of transfers. You mentioned LeDuc. They also brought in Malcolm McClure from Cal. How does that duo fit in the picture? So I do think that, they've got some pretty clear talent up front. I think, if I'm betting on one guy to be an all-conference type guy, it might be someone like Watts, but I also wouldn't count out Mataialona if he can be a more consistent tackler.
Yeah. Again, that's, what did he have? He had 2 sacks, 53 tackles last year. Mm-hmm. I just need defenders to make plays. Like, before we're moving on linebackers, I was looking at, when I met inside, when it was the Oregon transfer, LeDuc is from inside line. I don't know why that inside lineman. That's just misreading. Or maybe what I was reading wasn't good information. I just, inside means down lineman. But you're right. Like, if those guys can, like, if I'll say Naki, because I'm going to butcher the last names. I remember, did you see our DM from our buddy Josh about the Colorado State guy? Like, 10 vowels in there. I'm like, those names, we do our best.
It's Mataialona.
Yeah, Mataialona. Yes, it's difficult, but like, he could. What if he gets 10% better? What if this other guy gets a few better? And that, if that unit's going to be what we think could be pretty good, like, that could go a long way. So they're not giving up the 30-plus points a game they're doing when they're playing. Like, give up freaking 30 points to Hawaii last year. It's unacceptable. Like, giving up 40-plus to Boise and Fresno. Okay, not the end of the world, but we're giving all 55 points in credit word. That group is going to have to do two things, because if they need to get the quarterback clearly and then help a little bit in coverage, because now this year especially we're replacing three of the four secondaries, including a fringe All-American in Bentley Sanders. And so they just
they only had 10 sacks last year.
Was that their 10? Did they have only 10 sacks last year? Am I reading that wrong? 12 sacks last year?
Peterson had six. But they're...
What am I looking at here? Oh, man. I'm on the wrong website. I'm looking at... Sorry. I was looking at interceptions, not sacks. So let's go. Let's stick with that interception section with DB, because Sanders had 5 last year, and he's gone. Three of the top four guys are gone, like we mentioned. So who's going to be there? Who's their main guy in the secondary, Matt? Who do you think that's going to be?
Well, okay. So it isn't quite as dire as it may seem, losing so many, you know, leading tacklers. I think it's pretty clear they definitely got pushed a lot more than they are probably comfortable with in 2022. You know, 60% completion rate allowed, 7.8 yards per attempt allowed, and maybe most damningly, you might say, only 43 pass breakups, which was tied for the fewest in the Mountain West. I think the silver lining, though, is that two guys who had a pretty big chunk of that are both back for this fall. And I would imagine on paper, those are probably Nevada's starting two cornerbacks, Isaiah Asisima, who had 9 and 2 interceptions, and Jaden Dedmon, who had 8 plus 3.5 tackles for loss. So I do think that they are probably set there. They also brought in, you know, a guy like Trey Weed through the transfer portal, who might be a pretty important pickup if he can make that job his own. He came in from Eastern Washington. Last year, he had 30 tackles and 3 interceptions. And then there is the potential for some other guys who've played in more limited roles over the last one or two, you know, handful of years that could feasibly step up and take on a full-time role. I think one that I'm very interested to see if he can finally win a starting job and what he might do with it is Imani Johnson, who only 173 snaps last year, but among Wolfpack players on the defensive side of the ball, he did manage a PFF overall grade of 79.8. That is number one among defenders back for 2023. I'm very interested to see if he can be that kind of guy to, you know, take that small sample and turn it into something that the Wolfpack can rely upon all season.
Well, he's played. This is his, what, 6-year of eligibility for Johnson?
Yeah. So he's been around for a while.
And the hope would be for
him. You know, last year was his best overall season. So despite the fact that he hasn't been a full-time, you know, starter in his tenure with the Wolfpack, maybe now is his time, now that there are so many job openings in that secondary.
Yeah, that's the same. Like, there's a handful of guys we mentioned, whether or not they put, just special teams, but they're seeing the field, but just not necessarily in a huge capacity. Like, he's appeared can be one snap, honestly, one play. But in 24 games the past 2 years, 33 games he's played about 45-ish games, if my math is correct here. And that's a lot of games to play. And it's just now it could be one of those guys here. Now's my chance to be, I played 11 games last year. I'll play in every game now. It should be a starter this year. I'm going to have more opportunities. Sometimes it takes a minute for guys to get better. And him playing in that amount of games and having a okay amount of experience, maybe, like we said, maybe it's the time. Okay, now here's my time to shine. I'm going to do it because I know I'm the guy. And there could be a million reasons, like, whatever hesitancy, or maybe they don't think they're that good because they don't start. But you got to have the confidence. I'm not saying he doesn't, but some players like, I'm just a backup here. I'm just here for when a guy gets tired. Now you're the guy, and there's a lot of everyone, this whole team should be thirsty and ready to go and wanting to make good plays and help this team to be better because they weren't good last year. Everybody knows if you want to be pretty good, or if you're going to be at least decent on your team, you're going to have a good chance to play and make a name for yourself. So there's opportunities around, even in the secondary, where there's two guys who have it nailed down, but a couple spots are open. So everybody's team has a chance to make a name for themselves. Even if you're number three right now, if you're a number three linebacker, if you're sitting here and you're like Maurice Wilmer, middle linebacker number three, he's a redshirt senior, maybe he'll have a chance to come out and play. You're Casey Williams, backup, a strong safety. you're probably going to get a chance to see some playing time to make a name for himself, at least be productive on some level, because there's very few players on this team, if at all, like, oh, he's your starter no matter what. There's not a ton of players. There's going to be room to shift this depth chart around to make plays and move up, or even move down if you're one of the guys who unfortunately doesn't play extremely well. There's opportunities abound, as I'm getting at. And I think that's what there could be hope for this team. Guys, there's just coaches are going to give guys a chance to come out there and play.
Maybe not so much on special teams, though.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fine.
But that's because, you know, Nevada's in a pretty Brandon good spot Tolton. There, all things considered. Yeah. All-time yeah. conference Brandon. Leader now in field goals.
Field goals made?
Yeah.
I remember, was it Purdue he beat a couple years ago, like in 2019? Those were the days. Beating Purdue and guys stiff-arming. Was it a Carson Strong throwing a stiff-arm against people and spinning around running for big plays?
You know, wasn't entirely healthy last year, did miss 5 games in the middle of the season, but was still just as good as ever when he was on the field, 10 of 12 on field goal tries last year. And even when he was hurt, you know, Matthew Killiam, you know, held his own when he had, you know, the opportunity to shine, 3 of 5 on field goal attempts, 10 of 11 on extra points. So I think that Wolfpack fans can feel pretty good about the future once Tolton graduates. And then Matt Freem also had a pretty nice debut as a punter as well. It may not be a unit that has like all conference players anywhere, but Tolton's definitely in the conversation, and it wouldn't shock me because, you know, punters do tend to have kind of linear year over year progress. So if Freem can improve just a little bit more, that could bode well for the defense's chances of getting off the field a little more often as well.
Yeah, help with the field, help with those things. So it'll be, you know, it will be the strength where making field goals, the offense comes up short. But also, one thing before we get to schedule, did you see they're bringing in the touchdown trident to counter the takeaway trident?
Well, that's good.
Hopefully, can they use it enough this year? That's the thing. I want them to. You can't bring out a new trophy or sideline prop and have it kind of sit in the trunk all year. So they better get the offense brings that motivation to have the takeaway trident do well and also the touchdown trident. So looks like it was, I think, donated with 4 new tridents, 2 for touchdowns, 2 for takeaways. So hopefully they'll get that team sparked up like the giant slot machine we have in UNLV. Boise State used to have the turnover thrown, or the touchdown thrown. What was it? I forget what it was. I think it was a turnover thrown, right? A couple years ago. So props are great. Now just hopefully get to use them a lot, because that's what makes college football fun.
That's right.
All right, time for schedules.
Let's do it.
Oh, boy. They start at USC. Number 6 ranked USC, Pac-12 Network, evening, late afternoon game. Is this going to be like an Alabama-Utah State game last year where the starters were pulled at halftime because it's getting such out of hand?
Probably.
Oh, great. Like, what, like, not to get, we're both saying it's lost. We know what's going on here. It's not going to be a victory for the Wolfpack. Like, what do you want to see in this game where, okay, I see something here to where there might be, like, show some sort of, like, proof of concept or something where, okay, I see where there's a positive, a bright spot here. Like, what can we see? Is it because the USC defense was not great last year? I don't know how much better they can be this year. Is that near where we see if the quarterback or running back make some plays, make some opportunities for himself to say, hey, there's a little something there? That's about the only area I can maybe see defense is going to struggle, including the good.
They're not going to match Caleb Williams and Brenton Rice and Mario Williams and Dorian Singer and company point for point. Like, of course, I think that's pretty clear. Yeah, I think even the most optimistic Wolfpack fan will probably agree with that. But I do think you're right. Like, yeah, the Trojans also brought in a ton of players through the transfer portal. And they do have, you know, standout holdovers like, you know, Kalen Bullock is back. He might be the best safety in the country. Shane Lee is still around. He might be an all-conference player. So, but I do think, like, if he... Yeah, you got to at least prove you can move the ball a little bit. Yeah, even if on paper the Trojans will have more talent, like, you, because you're going to get the first crack at seeing just how much progress that USC is going to be able to make on that side of the ball. That's a team that harbors playoff aspirations. So I think if I'm a Wolfpack fan, I'm just looking for I don't know, 17 points maybe.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, we'll see. The line right now is 38.5 in favor of obviously USC. So, or excuse me, 30.
Probably going to be a long day, though.
Yeah, so it's a loss. Next game should be much more competitive and much better when they take on Idaho at home. Because they are, aren't they? It's in Reno, obviously, playing the Vandals. What is they? I saw it the other day. I need to check. Were they number 7 in the FCS poll?
I don't recall exactly where they were, but I can tell you in the FCS minute, if you'll allow me. They were a playoff team last year for the first time since making the drop to that FCS level. Top 25 in offense, top 25 on defense. They really engineered a pretty strong turnaround under their new head coach, Jason Eck. They have a quality quarterback. Giovanni McCoy was one of the better young, signal callers anywhere in that level last year. They also have their leading receiver, Hayden Hatton, back. He had 83 catches for 1,200 yards last year. The Vandals are a very dangerous opponent for a team with as many holes to address on the side of the ball. And let's not forget, as we mentioned at the very onset of this podcast, this is still a team that lost by 2 touchdowns to Incarnate Word last year. So I tentatively have this one penciled in as a Nevada win. If I'm being truly honest, it would not shock me if they drop this game.
Yeah, I guarantee I'm with you on there, because looking at the top 25, they're number 8. Incarnate is right next to them this year, number 7. And Idaho is 7-5 last year. They're number 8 team in the FCS ranks. Also, I know they haven't done it yet. I think it's probably going to be this week or something. If people listen to Split Zone Duo, they do the FCS upset draft.
Mm-hmm.
I could see. I don't recall exactly how they do it, but I know they do a point system. I'm pretty sure this will be a lower point system, which means a more likely upset.
That's probably correct.
So I'm leaning. I mean, your direction, they probably should win and could win, but I would not be surprised if they lose by 10 points, because this Nevada team's not great. Next game on the schedule, they have continued their non-conference slate as I close their schedule out. Is it Kansas at home?
This is another pretty good opponent coming to Mackey. They get one of those like every other year, it seems.
That's true. They get them at home. The offense is what's going to be difficult, because they have both the preseason Big 12 quarterback of the year and running back of the year, and so they're going to have some challenges. Like, the defense is going to be tested the first 3 weeks of the season. Even against Idaho, they'll be tested a little bit. But like, the way Kansas plays is, like, remember, if people watched the Arkansas-Kansas bowl game last year, that was one of the most exciting games in the country. And it had, 100-plus points in that game. I think it went to overtime as well. But when they have all this type of talent at their positions where, if I could speak today, like, they have an offense that's going to run up the score. It won't be as bad as USC game, but they're not going to be able to keep plays like Jalen Daniels throwing the ball and things like that. Scoring points is going to be what they do. And I don't know if they can stop Daniels or others on this team. It's going to be tough.
I mean, I think that the situation here is sort of what you're looking for against USC, because while the Jayhawks you mentioned, the offensive talent they have, Daniels, Neal, also tight end Mason Fairchild, pretty good himself, as well as like one of the better offensive linemen anywhere in the Big 12, and Mike Nowitzki at center.
Yep.
There's more questions on the defensive side of the ball. So even though they do have a guy like Kobe Bryant coming back, he was an all Big 12 pick last year, 12 passes defended. If you're Nevada, you just want to be able to, you just want to score some points, move the ball, especially since, the Jayhawks were really kind of a story of two teams last year, where they got off to a very strong start. As everybody remembers, they were 5-0. But then after dropping the one score game at home to TCU, injuries played a role in this to some extent, but they weren't quite the same team in the second half of the year either. They gave up 52 points to Oklahoma on the road, gave up 35 to Baylor on the road, 43 to Texas Tech, 55 to Texas, 47 to Texas or to Kansas State, their arch rival.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing you can understand what I'm getting at. Like, the defense took a major step back as the season progressed against some serious competition. So I think if Nevada wants to prove that they can be serious competition this year, I don't think they're going to win this game either. But, you know, this is the kind of game that they should be able to make more competitive if they hope to compete in the Mountain West this year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be closer than USC lost because the defense isn't that great, but it's going to be another defeat for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, I think defeat's going to be the main focus of this year, right? This team we're talking about, because then they go to, I think Texas State is a real chance for them to get a win this year, because Texas State was one of the worst teams in the FBS last year.
Not great, no. Fired their head coach Jake Spavital out.
Yeah.
Former Hawaii coach GJ Kinney, after a very successful 1 year stint at Incarnate Word. You may remember he was the guy who put up all those points against this very same Wolfpack team last year.
And Wolfpack kept a break.
Now he's the coach at Texas State. And it's interesting to sort of see what the composition of this year's Bobcats team looks like, because they do have some holdovers from, you know, these teams that by and large underperformed, but they do have some like individual guys who have proven to be pretty good over the long haul. Like on defense, for example, Jordan Revels, their defensive end, is still around. Last year, he led the team, I believe, in both sacks with 4.5 and 6.5 TFLs as well. He's back. They still have, you know, their top three runners back from a year ago, including Calvin Hill, who was banged up here and there. If he's healthy, like, he can be a difference maker. You know, 2 years ago, I believe he averaged about 5.5 yards per carry. Major question for Kinney and for the Bobcats is, what is the quarterback situation going to look like? And because, again, Lane Hatcher is out, but they brought in Malik Hornsby from Arkansas. They brought in TJ Finley from Auburn. You know, if you watched the San Jose State game last year, you may have come away less than impressed with Finley. But, you know, one of those guys is probably going to win the job, and they're going to have at least some decent pieces to be able to throw to. Guys like Ashton Hawkins, Bo Corrales, veteran pieces. So I think if there's one FCS or FBS opponent in the non-conference schedule they should be able to beat, it should be this team, especially since, you know, even despite the fact, you know, they have Rebels, you know, and Kinney also brought in, you know, safety Caleb Culp from UIW. He had, I believe, almost 200 tackles over the last 2 years with the Cardinals there. So they've got some talent on this side of the ball. I think Nevada should be able to win this game, though.
Yeah, they should. It looks like Hornsby's probably the starter, where he only played a little bit of Arkansas, but he didn't even complete 50% of his passes, which is not good. He can run a little bit. But again, with G.J. Kinney's type of offense, there's potential for the offense week four of the year, to figure a few kinks out and just get real game experience to where they could kind of over exceed or at least start to show what they could do. But I think Nevada should win this game, but I don't really trust Nevada all that much overall, but Texas State's not great. It's on the road, so that's a concern for me as well, away from home and a decent road trip to where is Texas State? They're in San Marcos, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, I'm trying to think where that is in the state, but it's a small town. So getting from Reno to there will probably not be super easy. So that kind of adds to it a little bit if we want to just kind of pile on a little bit, unfortunately. What do we have for conference play? Because here's what the road slate is. It starts off with this: Fresno on the road. They get no help on the road games. Fresno State, San Diego State, Utah State. And then their easiest game is probably Colorado State, and they're going to be a better team. So that's their road slate does not help a team that is kind of in need of, as we discussed, a little bit of assistance to get a few victories. And that's a tough road slate for them. All their easy games at home. Like, they do miss Boise State. They do miss Air Force. They do miss some pretty good teams. But it's their home road split is not favorable one bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they're going to threaten to make progress this year, it's going to be by flipping some of those results from last year against the more beatable teams at home. Like, UNLV didn't play their A game in taking back the Fremont Cannon last year.
Nope.
But Nevada made enough mistakes that they just kind of gave the game away late. And so, and to a certain extent, you throw out the numbers when these two teams meet, because it always seems to be a very close contest between them.
Yeah.
Good old-fashioned hate. Hard to replicate, things like that. And then if you want to compare them against New Mexico and Hawaii, it makes for an interesting trio, because that's, you know, that's the three teams that are generally considered to be projected to finish at the bottom of the conference this year. But me personally, I have better feelings overall about the Lobos and about the Warriors than I do. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, in particular, I feel better about their chances to make improvements on offense.
Yeah.
So even the home games may not necessarily be that easy, especially if the Wolfpack can't figure out their quarterback situation, if the offensive line can't, you know, collectively protect the quarterbacks better. There's potential it could be just as messy even as other teams are figuring it out.
Yeah, because at home UNLV should be better, I think, or at least even if they're the same, they're better than Nevada. New Mexico, there's hope with Dylan Hopkins and the UAB guys coming in. Quarterback, Danny Gonzalez redoing his whole staff. That's probably the most winnable game. Hawaii's at home, so that's a trip for the Warriors to come out. And we know at Timmy Ching's year two, it should be a bit better, but I think it's going to be good enough to beat Reno, to go into Reno win. The Wyoming, there's no chance. Like, Wyoming's going to win, like, they could win 9-0, and it won't be that close. You know what I mean? Like, their defense will probably shut down whatever Nevada throws at them. And Wyoming's offense will do just enough to score some points here or there. So I honestly think I see them losing every game at home.
Well, if I'm being honest, I see them losing every conference game, period.
Okay, I'm glad you said it first to me because I'm in agreement with you. 0-8 in conference play.
I think if they're going to steal wins this year, they're going to have to take advantage of shaky offensive lines, which is going to put a lot of pressure on the front seven, front six, whatever you want to call it, to be as productive, at least in terms of attacking the quarterback, as they were last year. And to me, I think if you're looking for places where they can post, you know, wins with that in mind, you know, the two home games against New Mexico and Hawaii stand out as obvious candidates. But you might be able to throw the road game against Colorado State in there as well. Like, we don't know what the Rams offensive line is going to look like either. And I think to a certain extent, you could say the same thing about the Aggies too. So, you know, that four game stretch going into November, two home games followed by the two road games back to back. If you're looking to make hay, I think that is the most likely stretch that they're going to do it.
Yeah, like I'm looking at games they can win. Maybe UNLV, just because it's a rival, it's been close, but New Mexico, Hawaii, Colorado State. I'm maybe not Utah State as much. I think they probably have more talent overall, but I could, if I'm being an extreme optimist, I can, and it's not very good to say when it might be two wins, but I do think there's a chance it could win, if everything goes right, three conference games. But I going week to week and everything in the vacuum, I don't see them being better than any team on the schedule they face. There's chances to Hawaii, like I said. It's difficult. New Mexico, I'll see it when I believe it, but yeah, it's over for me in league play.
So let me ask you this then.
Mm-hmm.
If you see three or four potential conference wins on the table, we've talked about a lot of questions that the Wolfpack are going to need to answer. What do you think is the one question that if they absolutely hit the nail on the head and find the answer for this year, maybe, you know, depending on the situation, for 2024 as well, what do you think is going to be, like, what is the answer that you think is most likely to propel them to as many wins as they can find on the schedule?
That's a good question. Based on who they play and what the, because there's a lot of questions, like we mentioned, so many question marks of what they have with transfers or guys who are just finally getting the chance to start. I think, here's the thing, look at who they play in Mountain West and they'll kind of answer a question. The only legit offense they play that's going to be elite is Fresno State. No other offense should scare an average team in the Mountain West. So that helps them a lot. So they don't need to score a lot of points to win a couple of games of league play. Like maybe UNLV, they could show flashes. Possibly that's an unknown with Brendan Marion, his offense there, and Doug Brumfield throwing the ball. But Wyoming doesn't have elite offense. CSU, they moved the ball a bit, but they're probably not going to have their starting running back, Avery Morrow. Clay Millen will take a step forward, but he wasn't in Torrey Horton, but they weren't exactly explosive. Hawaii, they're going to do the run and shoot, but how effective will it be? New Mexico never has a good offense. Aztecs, we know, replacing what they do. So they don't need to score points. So I could kind of eliminate the offense there just because the offense, maybe I shouldn't, but the offense doesn't need to be, the offense can be just okay and be competitive in a lot of these games. I think the defense has to be better. And I guess I'll say the linebacking group might be an area because it's the front. Maybe I'll go bigger into that front six or seven, like you mentioned, whatever down linemen they're going to do. I think if that area, if they can limit these offensive limited teams are facing to even fewer points, that will help them a lot. I think that's where I'll go the front bit because if they slow down San Diego State, okay, they honestly may only need 17 points to beat San Diego State, New Mexico, or Wyoming. I don't think that's far-fetched for them to score that few points and maybe win those games. So I think if the defense can take a step forward, that front seven can attack the quarterback and you're not having your secondary be three of your top four tacklers, that's what I think would be help them the most this year. And I guess going forward, but for this year, the way schedule plays out, they don't need to score a ton of points to win more, to win some games. They just got to slow down the teams that don't have offense and allow their offense and allow that side of the ball to limit opposing offenses to where when you score with Brandon Tolton, if you give him four field goals, okay, they might win a game 12-6 against like New Mexico, possibly.
Wolfpack need a quarterback, dude.
I know they do, but
they need a quarterback because they are actually on paper not that far afield from the kind of offense performance, for example, that San Jose State put up last year with a shaky offensive line, but a quarterback who could make the most out of a sticky situation, or okay. A San Diego State, which wasn't great in the first half of the year. Definitely saw a turnaround once they actually had an answer at quarterback, even despite the fact that the offensive line was still shaky in pass protection. So I think that that kind of jump forward is on the table for this team. Mm-hmm. Even if the offensive line still isn't great shakes, if they have a good enough quarterback who can like bail themselves out of plays every so often and just get rid of the ball effectively and safely, more consistently than they got last year, that's going to solve a lot of problems. They need a quarterback. They need someone to start all 12 games and just be the guy for this year and for next year. They can't afford to dally around if they want to take a step forward this fall.
Now I get your point. I you're not wrong. They definitely need a quarterback to score points. And so I think they need it all. There's a lot they need. I just think they could score fewer points and still get more wins and need the, like, it would clearly help if they could score 30 something points a game. So that's clear. I think offense to be more fun and to be more a watchable product to tune into the amount of football games on TV, that's going to be good. So both answers are correct. We just have different reasons for getting there. My thought was just that, well, you're playing teams that don't score many points, hold them to fewer points because your offense isn't going to be very good. So maybe your answer works as well, where they just, if they have an explosive quarterback or offense, they can go in and beat Hawaii, New Mexico, and CSU, who may not score, or Wyoming, who don't score a lot of points. If you have two big breakthrough plays, like I could see, let's say quarterback comes out and plays extremely well back. If they get two touchdown passes on offense for adverse Wyoming and a couple of field goals, they could win that game. They could win that game with like 17 points or 20 points. So
what do you think is the, what do you think is like the 99th percentile outcome for this team?
Oh man, 4-8.
What do you think the floor is?
Oh, over. They can lose every game.
Yeah. I was going to say roughly the same thing. Yeah.
Cause like, again, like there's the schedule. They don't outside Fresno State, and we know San Diego State will be good. Like they're, and obviously, well, sorry, they have three good conference games, but I could see a path of beating Wyoming. I could see a path of beating maybe San Diego State. Like I'm reaching here, but the reason I'm saying, folks, people are like, oh, your side, they're not going to win. I'm like, they're probably not. But the way those two teams play, what if Nevada gets a kick return for a touchdown and a short field and scores 17 points of turnovers? Mm-hmm. Or what if they flip the field or Brandon Tolton hits two 56 yarders in the snow in that final weekend? Like, I could see same thing as San Diego State. I could see paths for wins just because the way those other teams play. Doesn't mean they're going to win, but I'm thinking four wins. Like if I'm going to pick two conference games you're going to win, I'd be picking New Mexico and I guess Hawaii because they're at home. I'd pick those two games if I'm going to go to say their ceiling of four wins.
I guess we'll wait and see. I don't feel good about their chances this year.
Nope.
But I do think if they do at least resolve some of the concerns that they have that we've talked about throughout this podcast, then I think at a minimum, they should be in a pretty good shape to really make a move in 2024.
Yeah.
But we'll see. That's why they play the games, right?
Yeah, it's another year of kind of building things up. And so hope we get that experience, which this could be like, we'll wrap up here real quick. A couple years ago in Wyoming, like they were terrible. Like Logan Wilson's freshman year, they're awful. But they end up having like 8+ starters for the next 2 to 3 years and eventually got better. And hopefully that's the case where it's not always correlative just because you play an experience means you're going to be good, but it can't hurt. And so maybe that's the path they're going on all these positions. But that is our Nevada preview. We project them to unfortunately not be well. Hey, pleasantly surprises, Ken Wilson. Get like a couple wins and play. Give an upset scare to Kansas or something. That'd be awesome to see. But this does wrap up our preview season. MWR.com. Again, check our website, like our show, subscribe, all that fun stuff. Keep coming to your inbox. Next up, we'll have we're going to figure out some bold predictions, a mega preview. Matt, maybe I'll have you record something from the road. I don't know if you could send that in. That might be something we could talk about if you have time. Not to put pressure on what's going on with your life at the moment, but it'll be me and a combination of others to do our big mega preview for some sort of big picture projections, predictions type stuff. And then week zero has 3 games in less than 2 weeks. We survived the offseason.
You love to say that, don't you?
That we survived the offseason?
That's right. We're almost there. I could taste it.
I do. The season's so short. It's 4 months. That's it. It's so short.
And yet it consumes us all season, all off season long, all year long. I can't wait to talk about games.
I know. It's so dumb and stupid and fun. It's great. So we'll be back. Games are coming up soon. Again, MWR.com to find all of our stuff. And we'll and Twitter, MWC Wire as well. And we'll be back next time. We'll be talking some games and stuff pretty soon.